And we're back on the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am Chip Patterson, and this is a Dodcast edition. So, of course, I'm going to be joined by the one, the only, Mr. College Football Senior Columnist, Dennis Dodd. Dennis, how's the week going? And I know you spent some time at Kansas State. What are you thinking with their big matchup heading in against Oklahoma?
It's a lot like last year, Chip, when they, except it's a different time of year. They were 7-0, ranked 10th last year, if you recall. So they had Oklahoma coming in, and Oklahoma had the game had lost some luster. Number one, Oklahoma just lost to Texas Tech. You remember that awful performance defensively.
Right.
So it lost some luster, and then Oklahoma beats them 58-17, scores 44 straight points, and like tied for the fourth most points Phil Snyder's ever given up, which is significant because he took over that program when it was the absolute bottom of the tank in college football. So that says a lot. And, you know, but that was a black mark in an otherwise great season. They were 10-2 going into the Cotton Bowl and lost to Arkansas. This is a little bit different. They're undefeated. We don't quite know how good they are. They did beat Miami by 39, but they're going to Oklahoma. But
right.
I think the table will turn. I don't think we quite know how good Oklahoma is. They haven't played anybody yet, at least in terms of championship caliber. So, I think Kansas State's got a pretty good shot. They're a year older. They're better. They're faster. Colin Klein is completing 73% of his passes instead of half of them, which he was last year. So, they're going to try to control the ball, and Oklahoma's going to try to put up 50. I think it's kind of a fascinating matchup.
It really is, and especially when you consider that Jones was a Heisman contender really right up until the Ryan Broyles injury last year. Then he sort of fell off. And at this point through 2012, after 3 weeks of play, Colin Klein's got a higher completion percentage than Landry does.
Yeah, which is interesting. I don't know if he's going downfield as much. I don't know that for sure, but I would suspect he's not. But, yeah, and really in that game last year, I recalled this when I was writing the story, Dominique Whaley went down in the Kansas State game last year. And that kind of started the trending downward for Oklahoma. I think they finished 3-2 after that. Ryan Broyles went down against Texas A&M. Dominique Whaley at that point was leading them in rushing. So that was two big weapons that Landry Jones lost. And, he threw a lot of interceptions at the end. And, you know, frankly, because they haven't played much, no one's really talking about him for the Heisman or among the elite quarterbacks. You know, he's going to have to show well, I think, for Oklahoma to be considered the favorite still to win the Big 12. And no one's talking about them in the championship mix. I mean, they may win it, but there's just not that vibe yet.
Yeah, they're the number six team in the country, and nobody is thinking about them at all as being in Miami in January. Certainly not playing for a national championship. I don't know about vacation, but I like heading into this game. This will be a great test on the interior defensive line of Oklahoma, which has been criticized. A lot of people circle that as one weak spot in that defensive unit. And Stoops, you know, this is a time when he can sort of show, you know, why his brother brought him back, you know, why he's going to be able to do it, because Colin Klein, the Wildcats are not finding a lot of people who've been able to stop them. And it was interesting, the stats took a dip last week, but didn't, I mean, you spent some of this week with Coach Snyder and the team. Didn't he say that the team wasn't as focused? He sort of knew that there was a little, they might have been looking forward. You could tell that it was a little bit of a flat Kansas State performance, at least to start the game last week.
I think that's a good way to put it. I think it was one of those look-ahead games. And I also think, North Texas is better than people think. I mean, the Sun Belt's probably got the best rep from start of the season to now than any conference in the country, considering what they've done. And Dan McCarney's played Bill Snyder a lot in the old Big 12 and in Big 8. So they kind of know each other, and I think North Texas is a lot better than they were last year. So that kind of contributed to it, but they did kick it in at the end. And we're probably looking ahead this week. You're right.
One of the former Big 12 members, Missouri, going to take on South Carolina in Columbia. And this is a South Carolina team. Connor Shaw's going to start. Spurrier mm-hmm. says that, you know, there's no way he can hurt his shoulder more. It's all going to be a matter of pain. Do you see any way that Missouri is going to be able to take down South Carolina? Because it seems to me like this is a very vulnerable Gamecocks team. But on the other side of the ball, you don't know how Franklin is going to be able to handle the pressure coming from Clowney and the rest of South Carolina defensive front. South Carolina, to me, is the one team in the top 10. Well, I say South Carolina and Oklahoma are two teams in the top 10 that I don't feel great about, and I'm just sort of waiting for that signature win to sort of, you know, instill confidence that they deserve to be up there.
Well, I feel better about South Carolina than I do Oklahoma at this point. They were one of my dark horse national championship teams at the beginning of the year. Now they've got a ways to go. Yeah, I think there's a lot swirling around this game, and you start at quarterback where, you know, this James Franklin thing became a national discussion where Gary Finkel still hasn't backed off the statement from Saturday night where he said James Franklin didn't want to play. You know, he qualified it by saying, well, I'm not questioning his toughness. Well, you can't leave that hanging out there and say two different things. You can say you misspoke. You can say you didn't mean it. But as we stand here right now, he's called out his starting quarterback for not being tough enough, for not taking a shot of cortisone. So you've got that hanging around. You've got Connor Shaw, you know, I think starting, but, you know, a little bit damaged. I think the South Carolina fans would be perfectly fine with Dylan Thompson coming in. I mean, he looks like he could maybe even have a better arm. I don't know how he checks at the line or his leadership qualities, but I think they'd be fine with it. But there's going to be issues there. You may see four quarterbacks play.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you might, I think you will see Dylan Thompson because the way Connor Shaw is playing with that hurt shoulder, and if James Franklin is the same sort of situation where it's a pain management situation, you know, as soon as you take that one hit, you're going to come off to the sideline and rest a little bit, because that seems to be the style with Shaw, is every time he takes off to run, takes a big hit to the back, he's got to come right out.
And Thompson's a little bit bigger and more of a classic quarterback, it looks like to me. And look, we haven't even gotten to the home field advantage. Marcus Lattimore, Jadeveon Clowney, you know, the advantage they're going to have on the edge on defense that Georgia didn't have at that time against Missouri, it's Missouri's first road SEC game. And, you know, let's see how they react to that. So, yeah, I think there's a lot at stake here.
Moving on to the Pac-12, you've got Oregon and Arizona. I know you called this a in a series of spots. You've been on the media circuit. I saw you on Tackling the Trends. You spent some time doing some college football 360 previews. You looked sharp. They had you in HD and everything.
Wow, that's dangerous. That I didn't know. I'm going to have to get a new makeup person, industrial strength.
But it was interesting. I liked that you said the key is in Arizona, Oregon is keep up. That's sort of the optimal phrase, because you know that both teams are going to be playing at the same speed. Arizona running 93 plays a game. And my sort of the way that I look at this is Oregon's had this in place. And so there's depth where at some point in the third or fourth quarter, even if Arizona keeps up, Oregon would be able to pull away. And I was wondering, do you foresee Rich Rod being able to get Arizona to that point where maybe in 3 years, if Chip Kelly is still there, we're seeing just, you know, 65-56 type games?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think this is a bit, because this is a big national game this week, I think it's the first look a lot of people will get at Arizona, which is getting a lot of love right now, and they should. You know, Rich Rod, this is exactly what he didn't do starting out at Michigan. I think he's very relaxed. He's happy. He's got a quarterback, which he didn't even know he had in the offseason. Matt Scott was a guy on the roster that seems to have clicked and fits in his offense. And look, if they play Oregon close, I don't expect them to win. But you're sitting there going, okay, here's Oregon, which, you know, is a pinball machine, and we played them tough there. You know, maybe we're the next Oregon. And he hasn't even begun to start getting his players there. So, yeah, I think that's the win for Arizona this week. And, you know, I looked it up. There's there's three schools from the Pac-12 among the top 10 in plays run. There's no other conference like that. And you mentioned it, Arizona, Oregon, and UCLA, believe it or not, they were like ninth or something. I guess that's a function of dominating people with some of their running games, because certainly they don't have the same kind of offenses or speed that these other ones do. But yeah, I think Arizona could become that challenger in the South. I mean, Chip, is it me or does USC seem so August right now? I mean, there's no buzz there at all.
There's absolutely no buzz. And it's interesting. I mean, I don't know whether that speaks more to college football in general, the nature of the media, or how all of us that were behind Southern California, there was always that sort of cloud of doubt. You felt good about it. You had the unfinished business. Yeah. You had Matt Barkley's return. There were a lot of great stories, a lot of great narratives, you know, especially with Kiffin. But everyone knew there were going to be some depth concerns. You were concerned on the offensive and defensive side. You know, I think you and I said in the preseason podcast, the real test is going to be what happens when they really start to get some injuries. Holmes goes down, and then you look at the backup center. He's tripping Matt Barkley. You've got the holding penalty on that last drive. And really, a lot of those penalties and those mistakes, I don't think are because I think it's Hobby. The backup center was, you know, unprepared. I think he just could not block the Stanford line in front of him. They were just absolutely overpowered. And so, you know, we don't mean to just drop USC, but until they come back and knock off they'll get a chance November 3rd against Oregon. That'll be sort of their time if they want to become a one loss team worth talking about. That'll be it.
It was more, that game was more about Stanford than it was USC. You know, they're ranked second and lost, but as a lot of people pointed out, when Stanford won, why did they rush the field? That's four in a row and five out of six. Now, was it an upset? Absolutely. But what it proved to me is that for whatever reason, they've kept this thing going, and it isn't going to go away anytime soon. From Bob Boldy hiring Jim Harbaugh, you know, who had Andrew Luck, he spanned two coaches, to David Shaw. You know, you throw a little bit of Willie Taggart in there, who was around in 07 when they beat USC, starting that run, and is now Western Kentucky and just beat Kentucky. There's something going on there. And I call them the West Coast Alabama. I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship or they're number one, but they're just very boring. They do everything right. They beat you up in the trench. And we're kind of getting back to that. We just talked about Arizona and Oregon, but we're kind of getting back to that where, you know what, running it like an NFL franchise, an NFL offense, isn't the worst thing to do in the world. Certainly Nick Saban's done it better than anyone else, but I think Stanford does it the same way. David Shaw was an NFL assistant. He fits perfectly at Stanford because of his background there. I think his dad went there or played there or something. But this is the new story on the West Coast. I think we're kind of USC'd out for the moment.
And that's that style, that boring style of football, is also what Mac Brown is really starting to put in at Texas. Because, you know, he saw when Colt McCoy went down against Alabama that if you want to make sure, if you want to be able to overcome the gauntlet of a college football season and win a national championship, you need to be able to do things sound, and you can't rely on one player. I mean, there are not 124 Cam Newtons that can come in and entirely change the face of your team. And so if you get that really, really solid defense, a physical defense that's deep, and then you can run the ball well, and of course, you know, Stephen Taylor runs the ball pretty much as physically as anybody in the country. I've never seen anybody get a good square hit. It seems like it's always going to take at least one set of hands to bring him down.
And that's what was most surprising to me. Certainly we've seen him run before, but I think you put it perfectly, just that square up hit, and he kind of slides off people. He's very physical. He's also very nimble. And, you know, we're saying all this, they've gone to like the number one prospect in the draft, Andrew Luck, to Josh Nunez, who's a game manager, and that's why I compared them to Alabama. That's exactly what A.J. McCarron is. He despite anything Nick Saban wants to say, he's a game manager. They took the wraps off him a little bit in the national championship game, but from what I saw Saturday against Arkansas, it's the same thing. So, I mean, wouldn't that be a fascinating matchup? Two teams that play the same way, but Stanford, you know, and their academic track against Alabama, probably the number one football, you know, warehouse or powerhouse in the country. I think that'd be a fascinating matchup.
I'm interested.
Football factory is what I meant. Sorry.
Well, I like you put Stanford up in the top five,
six or something. Yeah, five or six, and because look, I think it's really easy to do that now because what you're seeing in the other polls, I think, is just teams being up there on reputation. Florida State is really good. They haven't played anybody. I mean, their stats are silly, and they're ranked fourth. They've outscored teams 176-3. They've scored 24 touchdowns. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I think that's why the Clemson game is so big for both teams, because Clemson just down Auburn and struggled to do it. Florida State played Savannah State in a game that didn't even finish. And then who knew that, Wake Forest was that bad? And maybe that's a good indicator on Florida State. They're better than we thought, but traditionally Wake Forest is not that good. So, I think the first game was Murray State or something. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm ranking these teams, or trying to, by their actual accomplishments to this point.
And it was pretty funny when there was a long delay in that Savannah State game, and there was the multiple lightning delays. They already decided to go to a running clock. And then there was a long delay before the game was officially called over. And I've heard that one of the big delays in getting the game called was that Florida State wanted to make sure that the stats counted. They wanted to make sure that, they got enough of the game played so that instead of the game being called, it was just officially ended, which to me was kind of funny because at first I laughed because I thought they were trying to pad their stats. But then I think I also realized it might have had an implication on their record, right? Because wouldn't that
if it was one less win?
There,
and I talked to the NCAA about this at some point. I forget what it is, how far it has to go for the stats to count. In the BCS, it really doesn't count when you play a team like that. Now, if you lose, it does. But it doesn't really give you, the way that computers are adjusted, you just don't get anything from a 1AA. It's almost like you played one less game. And then Florida State can afford to do that because, look, they're fourth in the country now. And if they keep winning, they're going to be higher. And if teams lose, the upshot, which we haven't even gotten to yet, is that after Notre Dame beat Michigan State, I mean, I'm looking around. It looks more and more like a rematch, like it did last year. If Florida State wins all their games, are they going to jump over, two SEC teams in the top two? I don't know. I don't know that. Probably not. With Oklahoma, the team with the best chance probably is Notre Dame because they play such a good schedule, but they're not going to win all their games.
Right.
So it's become so, Alabama and the SEC have separated themselves so much that now you just, I listen to Paul Feinbaum and there's about two or three calls every day where, do you think an undefeated so-and-so would jump a one-loss Alabama for that number two? That's all. They're already thinking about that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to happen. So they've almost got this thing nailed in mid-September.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the two teams that can do it, I think Oregon and Florida State are kind of the two teams that will be able to do it, because Florida State plays Clemson, obviously, this weekend, but then they've also got a Thursday night game at Virginia Tech. And as sorry as Virginia Tech looked against Pittsburgh, and those players have come out and said, we did not take Pittsburgh seriously, that's on us. But if you win, you beat Clemson, you go to Lane Stadium and beat Virginia Tech on a Thursday night, then win the ACC championship, I think the Seminoles will have done enough. And the voters, there will be enough of a sentiment of not wanting a rematch. I could see the non-Southeastern voters.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Sort of rally behind.
Yeah,
I was going to say the non-Southeastern voters would rally behind a Florida State to get in there undefeated. And obviously.
Perhaps. Yeah. But again, they had that chance last year, and they saw it coming at least for 2 weeks, at least that month of November. And they did it anyway. So, I know what you're saying, but there's going to have to be some real backlash, because if we're talking about a Florida State team that, okay, their next toughest game is Virginia Tech, really? Then, you know, it may not happen. Now, it's a brand name, and, you know, if it was Bobby, yeah, they might do it. Bobby's long gone. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you just gave me a story idea.
What did you do? You, you're welcome. Do you think that Alabama and LSU so far are like no doubt the two best teams in college football?
I think I wrote about it last week, but you know, because I said it was a long way down, long look down from the top. If you're Alabama right now, and I said, well, yeah, I'll put Oregon and USC in the discussion, and you know, some other teams in LSU. Well, I think we can get rid of USC. Yeah, LSU is really good. And look, they should, you know, at home, they'll probably be favored on November 3rd. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Alabama won. And I think my point is, I don't think it matters who wins. I mean, because of what I just said and what happened last year, does it matter who wins? You know, they're going to have another month to build up their resume before December 1st. And if the loser is 11-1 and doesn't have to play in the championship game, and the winner is 13-0, you know, what other 11-1, you know, back to the original argument, what undefeated conference champion is going to pass that game's loser, especially if it's close like it was, 9-6? You know, and then that starts another discussion. Who can you see going undefeated?
Yeah.
I just can't see it. I get you made a good point for FSU. Okay, I'll listen to that. I don't think Oklahoma's going to go undefeated. Obviously, the Big Ten's out of it. That ain't happening.
no.
You know, the Pac-12, Oregon's going to be favored now, or Stanford. And look, if either one beats the other and runs the table, then you've got an argument, because Stanford will have beaten number two, and then, you know, whatever Oregon is, two or three at the time, so they're going to have a shot. But I hate to read voters' minds, but I am right now. I don't know if they do it.
Yeah, well, I think it was interesting in the Big 12. I don't think you've got a national championship contender coming yet. I would argue that if you were to just sort of chop off the top, you know, four or five of each conference and try and stack them up that way, you know, I think that strength. And the fact that they do the round-robin conference, that everybody gets to play everybody, I don't see a single team there that's going to be able to escape without a loss. I mean, West Virginia's defense will not be able to stop somebody, and someone will be able to play keep up and beat them at some point. I think West Virginia's the best team, but I still don't see them going undefeated through conference play.
No, I don't. I'm actually thinking West Virginia will win the league, but I absolutely agree with you because – you know, that's why, you know, what happened to Kansas State last year happened. They're going to have to play Oklahoma and Texas and these teams every year. You know, they'd miss Bill Snyder's record against Bob Stoops. You know, they've only met eight times since he was hired in 1999, you know, because of the rotation. So he missed 3 years, but they've only met eight times. Well, they're going to have to play them every year. And you saw what happened last year when they did play, 41-point margin. And I suspect they'll lose this week. Well, that would have been, you know, Missouri or something in some years in the rotation. So it's going to be really hard. My point, I guess, is roundabout that, you know, Kansas State's going to be eliminated this week from that discussion.
Right. All right, we're going to go off the field and also off the court. This is just a general college sports issue. It's been around for a while. You know, everybody talks about the O'Bannon lawsuit, and obviously the EA Sports games have been very, very successful for years. I will say I'm a I'm an annual purchaser of NCAA football, and my created Chip Patterson, Dennis, he's won some Heisman trophies. I'll tell you what, he's a running back. He's a balanced running back. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Always a very highly touted prospect. But there have been some emails that have come out which have sort of developed and moved this story along to the point where the NCAA might have a real issue on its hand as far as players' likenesses being used in these games, and the NCAA and people, high-ranking sort of college athletics officials having knowledge and so almost, is it even approval? I'm trying to wrap my head around this right now.
Well, this thing is so inside baseball, it's sometimes hard to explain, but it's fascinating to me. Really, to narrow it down, there's a part of the national letter of intent that every recruit player has to sign that says you understand that the NCAA controls your likeness in perpetuity by signing this national letter of intent. And of course they sign it. What they don't understand is, and what this lawsuit is about, is that the NCAA and EA Sports, the company they've licensed with, has taken these images without their names on the jerseys, we know that, and made millions and untold hundreds of millions of dollars with what they're calling their likenesses. Now, they're saying that's unfair. The NCAA is saying, hey, you signed it away. Now, a bunch of former players have joined in the lawsuit trying to get a piece. And I think they've got a heck of a case. Now what's surfaced is these emails from some pretty powerful people saying, yeah, we absolutely did use the likenesses. And in one case, there's one of the either EA people or one of the licensees saying, yeah, we plugged in the images and then just stripped off the names. Because that's been the argument. The NCAA says, oh, no, we're not using their likenesses. That guy wearing number 15 for Florida who carries the ball all the time, that's not Tim Tebow. and so what's going to happen here? And we're still in discovery for the lawsuit, which is supposed to be heard, I think, next March. If the NCAA doesn't settle this sucker, this is going to be an absolute disaster for them. Here, I'm quoting an email from Harvey Perlman, who's on the NCAA board. He's a chancellor of Nebraska. The whole area of name and likeness in the NCAA is a disaster leading to catastrophe as far as I can tell. Then he said he asked to be placed on the agenda for the board meeting in August last month. Yeah, this is really bad, and it harkened back to the restricted earnings code decision in 20 years now, that cost the NCAA, because they fought it so hard, $60 million. They lost the case, and then because they lost the case, the damages are automatically tripled, and it was something like $57 or $60 million. Absolutely the wrong decision to go to trial on that. And I think it's absolutely the wrong decision to go to trial on this. It's unfair. You can't do that to people.
It's do you want to hear something kind of funny? The at least in the NCAA college football game, I don't play the college basketball game regularly, but every now and then there's probably maybe 10 to 12 players that are intentionally sort of their image is screwed up so that EA Sports can come out and say, hey, like, we don't intentionally make them just the way they look. You know, look at this guy. And one of those players in this year's game is Florida State quarterback EJ Manuel. And they gave EJ they gave EJ dreadlocks in the game, and he was kind of pissed about it. At media days, he said, I've been clean cut my entire life, and they gave me dreadlocks in that game. He was like, I haven't had long hair ever in my life. The most I had was an afro when I was about 2 to 3 years old. So, you know, it's pretty funny that
that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they try and leave that back door open to, you know, have those couple players. And there have been some other ones in recent years where, you know, I think they had some quarterback as a white guy who wasn't. They mix up a couple of things every now and then, but it's sort of the I wonder if it'll come back to, you know, bigger student-athlete compensation-type issues, because that's always been my fascination, is because with the jersey sales and the likeness in the video games, those are two things where student-athletes have, you know, really potential, you know, legal opportunities as far as being able to get compensation.
Well, it's that the story to me is this, is that Mark Emmert is trying to push this stipend for $3,000 or whatever, and at the same time pouring thousands of millions of dollars into the defense of this lawsuit, which goes directly to compensating athletes for their images. I mean, somebody's going to pay here. You know, whether I don't think the NCAA is going to win the trial, and if they settle, it's going to be some class action with these people attached to the lawsuit. So I mean, that's total hypocrisy to me. Well, they're worth $3,000 a year, but certainly not their image, their likeness into perpetuity.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he
is. Yeah, their own body and soul.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one, and it's definitely one that not just college football fans, but all sort of anyone who's interested in, you know, the ongoing NCAA's role in sort of the student athletes, and wasn't it even the NCAA's considered tossing out the word student athlete? Did you hear that?
I'm sorry, say it again.
There was a group of proposed changes. I saw this headline. I need to dig into it. But you know, one of the proposed changes at some meeting or at some point was tossing out the phrase student athlete from sort of the books, I guess.
Well, that's very interesting, because do you know how that term came about?
I do not.
There was a case in the 1950s. Where a player got injured, I think he got paralyzed, and they sued the NCAA, and during their defense of the case, they came up with this term student-athlete so he wouldn't be eligible for workman's comp. I think that's what they were arguing at the time. And so from that point on, that actually sprang out of the lawsuit to legally protect the NCAA, you know, instead of calling them athletes. No, they're student athletes. They're indentured, unpaid amateurs. They don't have any right to have this money. So, yeah, that'd be interesting if they went back on that.
He is Dennis Dodd, senior college football columnist. You can follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. He will be at Florida State and Clemson, big top 10 matchup this weekend. Real quick, you got a game pick?
I'm going with FSU. I just think I'm hoping they win. I hope that doesn't sound bad. I think the ACC needs them to win. College football needs them to win. Clemson had its little runway walk in the Orange Bowl and fell down on high heels. We've seen that act. We need Florida State back, so I'm picking FSU.
Yeah, I'm tired of being disappointed by Florida State, and I'm sort of in that. Well, thanks so much for tuning into the Doddcast. Be sure to check out all the CBSSports.com college football podcasts on iTunes. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.